Helena Khan, Reel 3. Let me ask you about your marriage, Helena. You met your husband in the ghetto, did you?
Yes, I was sent to the trains, you know, to the station, to the railways. I was sent there, and there I met my husband. He already was working there a few months. He came, I think, 1941 to Poland from Germany. They became stateless because the father and the mother came from Poland, and he had to leave Germany, and they sent them to lodge, all of them. So he was then good nourished, you know, in comparison to us, and strong, and he went to the physical, to the black labor. And when we were sent over, then we met there.
What was his name?
Jakob Hirschkorn. I was married first time Hirschkorn.
What sort of chance did you have for, you know, for a courtship in the ghetto? What opportunities?
We only met every day when we went to the queue for our soup, for our meal. And he was working because he spoke German. He was German, actually. He worked on the office from the trains. It's an office, you know. They are Germans. And they have to keep the books, how many people are going out, how many people, in the beginning, before the selection, how many wagons with food come in for the kitchens to make the soup, how many millions of tons of coal came in to have the fire for them. Everything was very big, how many people, they have to keep the books. And because he was in Germany, then he was working and cleaning up the offices there, because they can't communicate with them. And they have the big dogs, and he fed them, you know. And he had, there was in the small garden for the Germans with flowers, and he kept them because he knew about his work. And he saw us always going to the soup, and he looked at me for a few weeks, and I don't understood one word German. He didn't understood one word Polish. We communicate with our eyes. Once he came over to me, and because we have the little Kultur house, you know, we have a little concert after an evening after work. And he came over to me to ask me if I would like to come with him to this concert. Because, and I don't know what he talked about, but some people who know next to me, the worker, said he asked you to come out with him. So I said yes. And we went together to the little concert. And from then on, after work, we used to meet each other, you know, when we came home. And we were courting probably 4 months or something, and he was 10 years older than me. And my brother-in-law was German from Dusseldorf, a very prosperous businessman. He says this is a nice boy, he's a decent boy. Because my sister and my mother said, good Lord, they still live. What was going to happen? You don't know, the man is 10 years older than you, and when you like him, he's good looking, but he can have a wife in Germany or a baby. So my brother-in-law talked to him, and then he says, you can go out with him. It is okay. And you have every Sunday, in the Jewish organization, the Jewish committee, where your weddings produced, you know. Now, this is very funny. Some people, because they were so hungry, that women, like here, for example, people marry each other to get the papers to be in England. So they married each other to get the pay of the food. Because when you married, anyway, then you could get special bread, you could get some cottage cheese, you could get some brown sugar, only for the people who married, you know. And then they married, they went to the, it was not in church wedding, this is Verunkowski. He was in charge, and he married you, you know. He was a very learned man. He had the power to do it, you know. And then they went out, and they shared the ration, what they have, and they were strange people. Not everybody lived together, no. But when I arrived with my husband, I was then, how many, not exactly 70 years, and then he looked at my husband when he had the ring, still from Germany, from his girl what he was engaged to. And funny enough, we met the friend of this girl after the war, what she survived, and she told my husband that she was sent to the gas chamber, she was there. She saw it. And she always talked about Herr Jakob, because they were very much in love. He He knew her for years because he was 10 years older than me. He was 1940 born and I 25. But he looked very young. Looked like my brother. Very, very nice man. Here. It's the picture of him.
Yes, he looks very nice. Were you sort of in love with him?
Oh, very much. First time when I met him, boy, I was in child. He looked after me. He never tried on me and kiss, nothing else. And he said to me, because he probably had before some girls in the ghetto, you know, because he was longer when I, by the working place where I was sent to the end. Then he says, when you are not a girl, then I'm not going to marry you. You know, by the Jewish law, is that you're supposed to be, what you call this in English, innocent.
A virgin.
A virgin. He, because he was very religious too, he said to me, he only is going to marry a virgin, nobody else. And it is very funny. 7 or 8 months after the marriage, what we consumed it, we have not the strength. First of all, we have not any food. And he was not able to be, but it was actually like brother and sister, to be honest.
Because, as you say, you didn't have the strength.
Not the strength. But we loved each other very much. And when we got married, and we got by the working place, by the barn, was a little hut. It's like a little house, what you have here, like a garden house. And they gave this to my husband because he worked for the Germans on the offices, you know. And there I had one little room. It was probably so big, like half of this spare room, what was my bedroom, my kitchen, and my everything. And there we were till the end from the evacuation.
So you were able to live like a married couple, were you?
We were here together at night. We went to work together. We came home. And sometimes I kept the potatoes for my soup when I have potatoes. And we made ourselves some soup, you know, to have for the evening something to eat. And I always kept a piece of bread for him. And he kept for me. But I know that the men need no bread. And I said, I'm so full up, I couldn't eat anymore. I have a very nice soup. And I used to give him. Then I became ill. I got pleuritis on my lung, water, where I still now have trouble, you know. And I was killing myself. I was always said, with my temperature, I got only afternoon. I couldn't go to study in bed, I had to go to work, you know. But I used to say to my husband, oh God, when I would have a piece of meat, I'm dying for a piece of meat. And he killed the 4 or 5 birds, you know, the little sparrows. And he prepared it and he cooked it and then brought it back to me in the evening after work. And I eat it up like nothing, it was like diamonds. So there, the director from this offices was in German, and he had dogs, you know, sheep dogs. And one was in she, and she had babies. And the next day when he came to his office, and he inspected in the garden, in the shade, then she eat up the baby. You know, the sheep dog eat up the baby what was born, the mother. She eat it, she killed it. And he was so annoyed that he took out the gun and killed the dog, killed the mother, and asked my husband to bury her. My husband not buried her. My husband skinned her because he was butcher from profession. He skinned her and he prepared the meat for nice many days and he brought to the, and he cooked them there in the office when he prepared the tea for them, you know. And he brought it to the barrack in the evening, to the factory, and gave me meat to eat and some gravy, what was probably the fat, what probably saved my life. But everybody in the barrack used to make to me when they saw me, oh, 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 and I don't know why. So a few days, and I said, I am not a dog, why you call me, oh, oh, oh. And they had told me that what is, he brought the meat, you know. So the old dog was shared by a lot of people to have something to eat.
Did you, you were saying earlier, you know, about when you had your children, that you hadn't menstruated. Did
no,
this stop?
No, we had any menstruation. This one, I never imagined to become pregnant with 17, 18 years, because we were undernourished. But when we survived on Poland, was a big story, till we came to Germany, because he was from Germany, and we were on the way to go home, where the house still stays now, I actually was now July, my children took me there, because the Germany by the little villages, there was here the house for the people, and here was the little synagogue, you know, because always a community of 40, 50 families. And now this was in shade for the cows, you know, for food. But now the last year, they have built it up from the government and make the little museum that people from the school and the teachers can come and have the in concert or some to explain to them what happened, because before it was not told in Germany nothing. So I want to see it. And my children were born in this village after the war. So he took me, my son and my daughter, with a car, and I had beautiful 3 days. And we went there, and on the wall, by the piano, is a very big poster, and there are the names from all the relations from my husband, from the sister, from brother-in-law, from mother and father, and for my husband who lost their life, and with all the other one. So we have pictures what we make to have this for memory.
What was the name of the village?
This was Wadern bei Trier.
Yes, you were saying your menstruation stopped altogether, did it?
Nobody had any menstruation. Because, you know, we have been in years of 70, 80 years, the way I was told here. You know, it was very sad. When I was working in the beginning of the plantage, then, you know, every 50, 60 yards was a girl put down to take out, you know, the little greens to clean the fields that the carrots can grow, you know, and the potatoes. And when came the sound to go for the soup, then I went over and I want my girlfriend to tell her it's time to go. And she not moved. She was sitting and she not moved. And I looked at her and said, Lucia, what is happening? And she was dead. She died sitting there in the sun. And we were not allowed to go to the burial. We have to go to work. She was exactly like my age, 10, 15 years or something. My best friend. It is, you know, I could sit here the whole year. It is so many to say. It is, every day was like a year. You know, you have so many books from America, what I have from Loggia Ghetto, so big, you know, what 40, 50 professors wrote every day, day by day. And everything is so real to me, because I went through it. Exactly when they came from Spielberg to interview me, and they couldn't believe it, you know, with the lights, with the phone, men, with the cameras. And I was then just very, very ill, and I couldn't take him on. I was too weak. This was after the hospital, I think. And after 4 hours, I said, I cannot anymore. I have to stop it. They sent me the tapes, funny enough, and my children tried to see it, and it broke their heart. They couldn't. Not my daughter, not my son. I have not seen it either. Because this is for memory, for the future generation, for legacy. It is not for us, you know. Exactly, we went to Beit Shalom. They went Tuesday from our group. Have you heard about Beit Shalom? I was there 4 times. I spent there 1 day last year, and then Mr. Smith, with all his team, interviewed the few from Loggia Ghetto. But for the group 45, we have there 4 women and me. We were interviewed to make pictures, you know, film. And then you have the tapes, you know. So why not spend this time? Because it's for me too long in the car coach, 2 hours, 2.5 hours is too much.
Yeah. Yes. Could I ask you about the people who were guarding the ghetto? Who were they? You know, what
Deutsche,
sort of...
German soldiers.
They were the SS. Wehrmacht, were they?
Wehrmacht. And mostly in black uniforms, the SS.
What was their behaviour like?
They were gods to us. We were banging down when we went to work. We never have seen them face to face. They were to the lords. We were the slaves. We had not a chance to communicate with anybody. They would not talk to us. We were Rassenschande.
But did they, was there much brutality, beating and torture?
It depends. Not in my time. What I can say, they took it out mostly for selection, because we were working, they need us when we couldn't work. So when the 44, the last people left the ghetto, so 2-3 days before, then they have to, we was always a small hospital for very ill people. And they were taken to the gas chambers too, you know. this was a very tragedy because you hardly could walk the way you carried on, you know. So everybody had to leave the ghetto, and the 700 people remained. And we not walked only 14 days. We walked from August 44 to January 45. The 18th of January, the Russian army came. So during the walk, we start to be already very bomb-watched, you know, from the Katyushas. And at night, it was so light like a daytime, and bombs were falling. So the soldiers, watching us, they went to the bunker. We don't know where they went. They disappeared, and we were three in the fields, and we begged to God, please send one bomb that we are finished. Because it was so high snow, January, very cold. We were living without any heat. It was absolutely terrible. And I have very bronchitis. I had a lot of water of my lung. But they had yesterday, I was x-ray by my doctor. And he said to me, you know that your lung never is going to be okay because it's damaged. I saw it on the picture, you know. So when we came back, when the alarm came off, they came back, the soldiers, and we went back to our barracks. And then 2 days later, it was an order after work that everybody who can walk and whoever is alive have to go down to the appeal, you know, to the way we always were selected. Everybody, not important how ill somebody is, have to go down. And our Jews said to them, this must be something very peculiar because the bombing went on for weeks. And probably the front come even near, we never know. So they hide themselves in the culture, in the cellars, and whatever they could, you know. And who remained? 29 Jews from Germany. They were, you know, my husband and 29 other people. When we had to go to that field down next morning at 8 o'clock, then we were only in state 700, or was already some died. I stayed a few hundred, where only 29 people arrived. The way disappeared. We don't know where. I don't know till today where. Because the way you Polish, they know every corner and everything, you know. And I was a child. And my husband was from Germany. He don't know where to hide. And I said to him, because the windows were all closed, you know, with black paper for the bombing. And I said, I want to go too, because the barracks, all the bedding, everything was the blankets put away. You can see people were rushing down. And I said, I want to go with them. I don't want to be on my own. And my husband said, look, you have nearly 39-40 temperature. You cannot go. It's very cold outside. I cannot hide you. You're going to die anyhow. So I'm going to remain. So we went down. And then when this was so empty, it was so terrible, all of a sudden, all the inmates are not more there. And all the bridges, you know, empty. And I was there on my own with my husband. I said, I cannot take it. I want to go with them. And he looked at me. I said, I don't know whatever happened. I don't want to be on my own. And when we decided we want to go down, the lot of the steps came up, the soldiers with the machine guns. And it was too late. So we were taken down to the place where we have the, you know, the selections, you know, the working place. And there came nearly 25 uniformed soldiers with the beautiful clean boots with white gloves on the horses. And they came to take us all, because a few months before, they took out at night 50 or 60 men from the factory, and they took them to the grounds, to the Jewish grounds, and they made graves there. My husband was there taken too, but nobody had to write to tell us. Because, you know, it is insane that the murderers always go to the place where they were killed. This was not, at night happening nearly for 2-3 weeks. We never know what happens. They were taking them, they were working during the night, and in the morning they came normal to work. But they were all very quiet and very distressed. And I said, what kind of work you do when it's so dark? Where do you go? It's not important, I am here. So they have to order 7 graves, mass graves, for 700 people, of which some already died, some were touched and killed. But they make 7 big graves for 100 pro grave. I stayed after the war with the soldiers from the American, English, and Russian army in French. They were, you know, buried in sacred people bodies where you put in 700 pieces from the Sefer Torah. You know, buried. They're still there. Or they still exist now, I assume.
And these were the 700 that remained, were they?
Yes, there's the two people. This was the graves where you done already a few months before. That when it
for you?
To the end,
for you?
Yes. Mm. Then to put them down that they cannot tell anything what happened. So we were just standing there and they don't know what to do. So some of them went with the dogs searching in the houses. And after 2-3 hours, they took us to the prison. This was the Kościelna Twierdza, that was the Gestapo offices. Us 29. We were in the middle walking, and round and round were the soldiers going with the horses, with the machine guns. And my husband was the last one that they gave him, you know, in the snow, then you have the people to take the children for walk, what we call the slate. And on this way, you covered with a blanket. We don't know what it was. But it was the foul too, you know, to put them in the graves, the bombs. Because we had two such slates, very high, covered with the blankets. And this was to put it in the graves when they would find the people to kill us. But they had not all people. So they were confused. And we were waiting and standing there nearly 3 hours till they had took us to the prison. And we were put down in the cellar from the prison. That was terrible. 20 people were, this was a big, like, 2 tables, you know, downstairs and up. They were on top 20 and down 20. Of my tummy were nearly 15 pairs of legs for men and for women. We were put in like the chickens, you know. And we heard, it was only an open one little window, we heard bombing. And we heard screaming, so they were looking for the people, and they found already when it came out 139 people. They found in the Anna places, in the empty ghetto, and put them in next door to the Anna prisons, you know. And some of them became very stupid. One of them was screaming, Wasser, please give me some water, I am so thirsty. And we said, we cannot do it, because they're going to kill us. And they came in and they said to us, we have to tell them where the people are, where you're hiding. And we said, we don't know. Then they closed the door again, then they came in again with the machine, and then you have to tell us, and we don't know. So we know what is going to happen. We were there for nearly 24 hours. 2 or 3 died, and my husband got there in very bad cold. He was lying on the floor where the water was raining, you know. And he couldn't come to me, and I couldn't come to him, because we don't know. We couldn't talk to each other. It was a terrible situation, without water, without food. And after 24 hours, we heard them banging on the door. This was, you know, very iron doors. It was prison. And then our people said, don't answer. They're probably the SS. They are drunk. They are annoyed that not everybody is found, and they're going to put in the bombs here, or they're going to kill us. So we have not answered the first half hour, but the banging was always bigger. And then they shook the you know, the door, you know, where is the keys. And then we just were Polish people. This was already finished. The Polish people came in, and they said to us, we are free, the war is over, the Russian army is coming in. And we came out, we were like drunk. Where we went, we all went to the factory where you're living the last 7-8 months. Because we know where to go. The Russian army arrived. There was a terrible agony. They used to take all the girls, women and girls, whatever there was, to took them to the barracks there. They were Cossacks, you know, from Virginia. They all know, they were all with the slits eyes, with the feet, you know. They were laying now in the front 3-4 years, you know. Dirty, black, and they were sold to their first time women, you know. And it was terrible. We had hiding. I not any hair. I was, you know, shaved. I was wearing a little red scarf off my head. And I was dressed in men's clothes. And when my husband put me down, we have William Frankfurt was an artist, you know. He had some paint. And he make here different colors, in yellow, in blue, and in red, that we are very, very ill. And when they came to us, we were screaming, Bolnoi, Bolnoi, come away, we very dangerous if you're going to catch it. And this helped us that we survived, because what happened there, this was terrible.
What did happen? Do you know?
They raped all the women. They raped the hungry, dead women. They raped them. They left them like little rubbish. It was terrible. Some of them later on told me this was horrible. And I was off this is in story. So it was 2-3 weeks later, we want to come out from Lodz because it was terrible. The Germans, the Polish Germans, you know, this Volksdeutschen, started to rob us. Whatever we had, start to take out the Stars of David, and then we got from the government, put in some bread with some sausage first time in the barracks, and they came and want to steal us from us. Because they robbed all the pots from the Germans. They had their very big the pots with beautiful food for the German army. So everything was robbed. It was horrible. It was terrible. It's not to explain. First time after so many years, I saw German soldiers without the guns running in this direction, asking us where the Russians are coming. Here came the Russian army, and here the Germans were running away. And not one from us killed them, you know. Not one from us killed them. They were the first time the lords were stupid little men to ask us for help. Can you imagine? 6 weeks after this, were dead bodies from Germans lying on the street where the Russian killed them. And my poor husband couldn't go out to buy nothing. He doesn't speak not Polish and not Russian. And when people came out and spoke only German, they assumed this was German and took the gun and killed them, you know. So my husband wasn't hiding after the war. It is so much to tell, honestly. It is so many stories. I could write it, I had to start to write the book 25 years ago, I couldn't finish. People write so many books, so I said to myself, what do I have to do? Everybody, another story, it's too much. My children always say to me, all my friends, why you not write it down? Because it's different from the Anna camps. And I said, in comparison to Auschwitz, then it's just nothing. It is terrible, but you read so many books, so many stories, so I don't want to give more. You know, actually, I am now in the Shalbiata for therapy, because I was depressed when my husband passed away. And they said to me, it's going to help me a lot when I write to start to write down how much of I can remember. It's going to give me an outlet to do something and not to think about it if you're on your own. This is what they told me. I am going to see them Monday morning for a treatment. Mm-hmm. I probably start to write it. Probably. But we have so many testimonies already. We have Bashem had a testimony, here the Smiths and the Shalom, Beth Shalom had my story. And
now the Imperial War Museum.
Story.
Yes. But this period, you know, of liberation, you were liberated by the Russians. Did life improve for you? Were you looked after?
No,
apart from these
all.
Dreadful rapes
not
and that?
All. We all have to hide and run away. We were there. So our own hope is to go away from the Russian section, you know, from Poland.
Was it total anarchy? You were saying about the rapes and the treatment of women.
You were not safe to go out on the street. I was still in child, you know. I never know. Then, when they came, we went to Berlin. Yeah, we were trying to escape from Poland. And we were traveling actually with Germans in the trains because, you know, it's people when they run, like you see now in film from the other countries, you come to the train, you wait in the queue, you push yourself. Then sometimes my husband was taken in, the train went up, I was stopped. So he had to go down and run to me till I can go on with the next train. So we were traveling by train, then we were walking, then we had country people who took us with the horse somewhere. It took us nearly 4 weeks. This was the Golgotha, till we arrived in Germany. Till we arrived, they were under the way you have seen thousand SS, what were running like mad. The Russian were chasing. The Russian have one bike with two men on it, and they have watches from here till here. What they took from the people, you know. And when we arrived in Berlin, the day was from the Jewish community. You know, there was actually a Jewish hospital in the Iranische Straße number 3. It was a Jewish hospital what was kept during the war. I don't know if the government know about it. I don't know. Opposite from the hospital was the Hitlerjugend premises. A very big house, you know, with the bunk beds, with everything. And there we went in. And we had not much to eat. I remember people went to Poland to buy food. We, our D-mark, the German marks were not guilty, you know. We couldn't buy anything.